Amazon Five Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. Londinium, 91 AD, 1st century Roman Empire. All is calm in Londinium. No threat of the blue-faced people. No threat of trouble in the interior of Eurasia, because we are 1,000 miles away from the trouble for our emperor Domitian. We're not Senate class, so we don't have to pay anybody. We're equus class. We don't work that hard. We have Greeks who keep accounts for us. We're surrounded by retired centurions and their wonderful young families. We don't even need a wall in Londinium. That's how confident we are. And yet, because Germanicus, Michael Vlahos, and I enjoy philosophizing, we travel 2,000 years from now to the quandary in the Eurasia, the same landscape we're looking at today, of what is to be done about the Ukrainian war, which is a European war, which is a subset of the civilizations wars that have been fought for 2,000 years. We have our Roman model, which is the might of Rome. In the 21st century, they have an alternative, which is the might of virtue. And right now, the debate appears from this remove to have two narratives, a Russian narrative and a Ukrainian narrative, both looking for history to substantiate their positions. But we go immediately to the battlefield with Germanicus. Germanicus, what is the Ukrainian narrative now on the battlefield, and how does the Russian narrative answer it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. Sadly, the Ukrainian narrative has become so tortured in its attempt to put a brave face on their hopes for success that everything rings hollow. And not just sadly, but perhaps or shortly, tragically, the Western media is beginning to disentangle themselves from their eternal pledges of support by essentially calling out the failure of the Ukrainian so-called counteroffensive, and basically, I think, setting up what could be a narrative construct that would allow the West, and in particular, the United States, and even more particularly, the imperial court, meaning the blue administration and its emperor, a way to cover up the massive defeat that a Russian victory in Ukraine would mean by essentially going the route of the Allies in the early part of World War II. And as you recall, of course, Britain and France had pledged themselves to Poland after the Munich crisis, did nothing to help Poland when Poland was invaded and ravished by Germany and the Third Reich in September 39. And then when France fell in June of 1940, the United Kingdom then reacted the same way as Britain and France did with Poland. In other words, what they did is create a space for the future in which they would say, oh, this heroic nation and its people were defeated, but we will welcome into our bosom the Free French, and with the Poles, of course, it was the Polish army in exile, the army of resistance, and also there would be a Free French government, and there would be a Polish government in exile, and they would be the kernel for a future return of Ulysses to Poland and France, and the eventual reestablishment of a democratic regime, which of course attained for France, and of course equally did not attain for Poland after 1945. But the fact is that I think the way out for a beleaguered administration whose entire foreign policy of the last 500 plus days has been to throw everything into bringing Russia down through a proxy war in Ukraine. If Ukraine is defeated, I think their approach will be this alternative narrative that they did everything they could, that the West stood shoulder to shoulder in the defense of Ukraine and heroically supporting it. And if Ukraine is defeated, it's not defeated. It's simply its government and its army will pull back and be welcomed into the bosom of the democratic states of the West, where someday it will return to a rebirth of freedom in Ukraine. And I think this is going to be the fallback position. And yet, we're not at that point yet. And where we are now is that Ukraine is floundering in its counteroffensive. It's failed. It's using up its troops. There's a very telling commentary and analysis in the Eurasian Daily Monitor, which is published by the Jamestown Foundation, a very neocon outfit, which substantiates everything I've been saying for the last several weeks, at least, that the Ukrainian population is no more than 20 million people. That is a tiny country against what is now a Russia, Belarus, eight times its size. And rather than saying, well, this isn't viable anymore, what it's saying is that even though for the third month in a row, the Ukrainian army has fallen 50%. That's 50% short of its declared recruitment goals. What we need to do is make sure, and this is a quote, the Ukrainian army needs to create a full-scale training program. Now, what that tends to suggest, in my mind, is the absolute wringing out of every last man in Ukraine to fight. And listen to what's coming out of Ukraine itself. And here's another direct quote. Unit commanders are not satisfied with the quality of mobilization, in which the quantitative indicator plays a major role. In other words, they can't get enough people. Then it goes on to say the mobilized drafted into the ranks of the armed forces of Ukraine do not have sufficient experience. But the worst thing is the quality, which they emphasize, of the mobilization resource, which has decreased. The retired are replaced by older people with poor physical fitness who have no combat experience at all. They represent easy prey for the enemy and low morale, which causes the weakening of the capability of the armed forces of Ukraine. And it goes on to talk about the problems in leadership and command. And the fact is that the Ukrainian army, as we talked about last week, is really approaching potentially a breaking point. And this breaking point has been intensified and exacerbated by the fact that Ukraine has gone all out to take all of its reserve units in one final fling to try and make some headway to get more NATO support. And this is one of the terrible realities that will haunt the U.S. and the West for decades to come.
BBC says that Russia is offering to negotiate now. Russia would be aware of what you're explicating about the Ukrainian army. Is Russia ready to cease fire and to accept a negotiated settlement in which it keeps the same territory it had on February 21st, 2022? That would be an exit strategy for both armies.
This is unknown, and yet surveys of Russians tend to show that 73% of Russians would be quite happy or at least satisfied with a freezing of the situation in place.
And Ukraine, the Ukrainian public has been told we're going to fight to regain every inch of Ukrainian territory. That there's an ambiguity there, because what is Ukrainian territory?
Well, we don't have any Ukrainian polls. Those aren't done, just as we don't have any read on Ukrainian casualties. But what we do know by inference and by all of the things I've just read is that Ukraine is at the last gasp. Now, the question is, does Russia want to go all out and create a situation where they won't have to deal with a resurgent Ukraine?
That would require a Russian mobilization. Is that imminent?
Well, it's not necessarily the case that mobilization is required to complete Russian goals. For example, there are enough inputs in terms of volunteers every month, which are apparently running at about 80,000 a month. Then there are the periodic conscriptions. And you could have a situation with some tweaking where there would be sufficient manpower. But all that is less important than what we talked about last week, which is a Ukrainian military that can no longer effectively defend the country. Now, does Russia want to push it to that point? Or are they willing to say to the West, we're getting to that point, do you want to just have a negotiation?
And would Russia accept the Donbass and Crimea? Would that be satisfactory for the Russian position?
The story problem, the story problem they're is
telling,
not,
it's about what they're telling their people.
Yes, but that's apparently all right with 73% of the Russian people. But is it a good bargain in terms of the overall goal? Because if Ukraine would be rearmed by the West to the point where 10 years from now there's another war, that's not a good deal. So I think from the larger strategic perspective, Russia should conclude the war from its perspective in a way where it solves the problem, not forever in a day, but at least for the next several generations.
Would Donbass and Crimea solve the problem?
I'm not sure that's enough, because if you have the situation as it stands today, you're going to have a bitter revanchist Ukraine.
Yes.
And on the other hand, though, I have to say, now this is important. If you know, as we know, Ukraine is only 20 million people. And by the way, half of the 20 million are pensioners. And that has to sink into people. In other words, it's a basically dying society. Half of your population, which is the size of the Netherlands, are pensioners whose pensions are being paid by the United States government.
And so therefore, Germanicus, is Russia negotiating for a ceasefire, or is Russia buying time for Ukraine to break? What is going on now?
We don't know. The fact is that it's quite possible Russia could make a deal now, and it would work, given the fact that thanks to the U.S. and Russia together, Ukraine has been emptied out. On the other hand, I'm not sure that Russia wants to take that risk. So there is, and this comes from interviews with Russian generals. They think that the Ukrainian army will crack by the beginning of September.
But that begins to sound like it'll all be over by Christmas, Germanicus. The Russian generals have not been good prognosticators, neither have the NATO generals been good prognosticators of this war. That's why.
On the other hand, I mean, I have to say this. They've been fighting for 500 and what? How many days? They have a good read on what's been going on. And so if their net assessment tells them that the Ukrainians are going to crack at some point, maybe they'll want to go that route. Plus, you have to remember, the Putin offer may be disingenuous.
Of course. I understand that. So that's what I was asking. So right now, I just want to finalize this. Right now, the Ukrainian narrative is we must win every inch of Ukrainian territory. The Russian narrative is wait and they'll break down. Is that where we are right now?
Yes, I think so. And I think that the larger assessment on the part of Russia is to push for a conclusion to this war that will bring a stable and lasting peace from Russia's perspective, and not simply have a ceasefire.
All right, but I want to make sure, does that include Kyiv? Does Russia want Kyiv?
No.
All right. Then it's satisfied with what it started with the war.
Clearly what Russia wants is Novorossiya and a rump Ukraine, which would be about the same size and have the same heft as Belarus.
But not Kherson, Mykolaiv, and Odessa. Russia doesn't want to push to the southern coast, correct?
Oh, I think Novorossiya includes...
Yes, it does.
Odessa and Kharkov.
I don't see... You think Russia could negotiate for territory it hasn't occupied?
No. I think the largest strategic goal would be to let the Ukrainian army come apart and then move into those areas and then move to a negotiation.
So you're talking about a larger war then, and a Russian offensive.
Well, yes, and that Russian offensive is possible.
With a mobilization or without one?
You see, mobilization, not mobilization, is a kind of false dichotomy. There will be sufficient forces for Russia to achieve those goals if the Ukrainian army breaks. However, there is war weariness and issues with casualties. And so given the polling that I just mentioned, there may be pressures within the leadership that might want to come to an earlier ceasefire.
The Russian leadership.
Yes. Okay. However, I don't see any willingness on the part of the Biden administration to accede to that. And so the rigidities, both within the Ukrainian position that you've mentioned, you know, all territory back, maximal goals, and the support of the Biden administration in their desperate desire to bring Russia to its knees would indicate that there is no real possibility of a compromise based on the current situation.
All right, let's move to the American position then. I'm speaking with Germanicus. It's Londinium, it's 91 AD. We're philosophizing about something that's happening 2,000 years from now. The American political process is underway for the presidential election of 2024. We're within days of the Republican candidates, some, all of them, most of them, debating in Milwaukee. And one of the matters that's sure to come up is the Ukrainian war. So what is the American narrative now? What is being told to the American people by the Democrats, by the Republicans, by the media? Germanicus is Marco Vlahos. I am Gaius John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.